This podcast is brought to you by MITEX, the Massachusetts Innovation and Technology Exchange, the region's premier association for thought leadership, technology trends, building business relationships, and professional training and development. For more information, go to www.mitx.org.
Hey, get your fresh bizcast here. I'm DC Dennison. This week, Robert Weissman explains Raytheon's new business strategy. Rob also tells us about Raytheon Chief Executive William Swanson's little gray book of corporate wisdom. Then, we have an unedited recording of Globe reporter Ross Kerber's interview with Olivia Ho Chen, Chief Executive of Aurora Imaging Technology. Aurora is a designer and manufacturer of magnetic resonance imaging systems that are designed to check for breast cancer and related conditions. The interesting thing I think about this interview is it shows how thorough a reporter like Kerber is in debriefing an interview subject. First up, Rob Weissman.
So, Rob Weissman, on Sunday you caught readers up with the latest in Raytheon's strategy. What, for people who haven't seen the story, what's the headline on the Raytheon kind of relaunch in a way?
Well, I think they call it mission systems integration, which is basically a fancy way of saying that they want to become less of a supplier of discrete systems, radars and missiles and communication and command and control systems, and more of a general contractor, a company that develops and builds electronic systems, but also integrates them.
I see.
And makes them all work together within weapons mounted on ships or planes.
I would think that's something definitely that probably answers a lot of problems that sort of the military has in terms of integration. You know, you buy a weapon from this company and a weapon from that company, that's got to be murder to make those things work together.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially as electronics becomes more sophisticated.
Yeah.
And defense electronics becomes more important to a weapon and to the military advantage on the battlefield, being able to integrate them and make sure they work together is essential. It's also the most lucrative part of the package now.
Oh, really?
And the companies that can do it get the biggest slices of the Pentagon's pie.
You know, it reminds me of IBM's, you know, strategy where they've become much more of a services company. Is it kind of that thing?
Yeah, exactly. So Raytheon is not only integrating the systems that it builds, you know, radar and sonar and others, but also they can take a system that's built by another contractor, and they can sort of work that into the overall platform. And of course, some of the integration work in the past has been done by the military services themselves, particularly the Navy.
I see.
You know, they did a lot of the integration on submarines and surface ships. You know, like other big organizations, as they're trying to control costs, they're outsourcing some of that work.
Oh, right.
And there's only really a small handful of companies that have the expertise and the track record to do this, namely Boeing, Lockheed, Northrop Grumman, some of the major heavy hitters in the defense contracting world. And Raytheon wants to sort of move into that league now.
You know, it's really one of the things I thought was fascinating about your story was this is work that really can't be outsourced overseas.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
There are some foreign defense contractors like BAE Systems, which was part of British Aerospace, which have operations in the U.S., and their operations do some military contracting. But for the most part, these are American divisions, and even at Raytheon, you have to be a U.S. citizen or have a security clearance to work on these programs.
Yeah, yeah. When I was reading your story, I was thinking that's really good advice for somebody in college or who's in engineering. Is like, you know, look at these companies because they have to hire at home. They can't be. They're not going to be shopping in Bangalore and offloading. So
yeah.
That's something, you know, that Massachusetts, you know, students should be aware of.
No, absolutely. And, of course, Raytheon is concerned. Their CEO, Bill Swanson, says that he's worried that Massachusetts and the U.S. as a whole aren't graduating enough engineers and scientists.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's not surprising since a lot of that work is going overseas. So, you know, probably in a lot of tech colleges, they're saying, well, don't get into that because that's the kind of stuff that gets shipped overseas, except for defense.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a real interesting little niche.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, even in engineering centers like Massachusetts or California, there's fewer engineering grads coming out now than there were 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more in China and India.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of his campaigns is to try to increase that number for jobs at places like Raytheon.
Yeah.
I think Raytheon's success and its ability to create jobs in Massachusetts is going to depend on that to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
More, a higher share of the jobs now are going to be higher end systems architects, systems engineers. Fewer production workers. That trend is already there. About half of Raytheon's 80,000 employees worldwide are engineers, but it's growing now.
I see.
As they move into mission systems integration, there'll be even higher percentage of engineers.
Yeah, yeah. Does this have any impact on the Hanscom? I think of Raytheon as being kind of Lexington, although they're now in Waltham, right?
Yes, well, the headquarters, yeah.
Yeah, but do they do, is this the same pool of talent that's going to be pulled for some of these Hanscom projects that are going on?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that there's a defense technology industry in Massachusetts, and some of it is sort of invisible to the public at large, but a lot of it is on Route 128, 495, and up in Andover, Tewksbury, which is where the center of Raytheon's integrated defense systems business is.
Uh-huh.
Hanscom and Lincoln Labs
and
Draper are part of that.
Yeah.
And then you've got a lot of precision engineering companies that are sort of mid-sized companies, do a lot of manufacturing, and they supply equipment to the Raytheons and the Boeings and the Lockheeds, and that's still a big factor in the Massachusetts economy.
Yeah,
and I think the state economic development folks would like to build on that.
Yeah, and certainly in the recent BRAC, kind of round of restructuring, we came out. At first, it looked like we came out great. Then it sort of got tamped back a little, but we still came out ahead, don't you think?
Yeah, well, Hanscom and the Natick's, the Hanscom Air Force Base in the Army Soldier Systems Center in Natick survived, which was in doubt at first.
Yeah, right.
And then for a while, it looked as though Hanscom could grow, that they would consolidate some research work from other Air Force bases from other bases into Hanscom, but then they decided not to do that, probably because I think they felt that the jobs weren't specifically related to what was being done at Hanscom.
Oh, I see. But in general, that sector is looking pretty good now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Last question. Swanson also has a book of unwritten rules. Did you you sat down with him?
Yeah.
What did any of those jump out at you, or did you see kind of a consistent sort of approach coming from him? Did you get the feeling you were talking to somebody who is kind of a Jack Welch kind of person?
He definitely likes these adages, aphorisms, and I guess he's been spouting this wisdom for years in talks with employees and PowerPoint presentations, and he always called them Swanson's unwritten rules of management.
Yeah.
But then I guess so many people asked him to share that, and I guess he emailed PowerPoint presentations to people like Jack Welch and to Warren Buffett, and it sort of had a little cult following within the business world. So then he finally printed them last year, and now they're Bill Swanson's written rules of management, and you can get them from the Raytheon website. They'll send them out to you for free, and I think 70,000 people have actually ordered them.
Really?
Yeah. They've distributed 70,000 copies inside and outside the company.
So I looked, you put, five of them in the story, so if people still have their Sunday Globe around, you can get a taste of them. They made sense to me.
Yeah, and because he has a little bit more elaboration, but some of the rules are, if you're not criticized, you may not be doing much.
Mm-hmm.
Look for what is missing. Many know how to improve what's there if you can see what isn't there. Don't be timid. Speak up. Express yourself and promote your ideas. Treat the name of your company as if it were your own. And a person who is nice to you but rude to the waiter or to others is not a nice person. And he says this rule never fails.
That's great. Hey, rules to live by, Rod. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks, DC.
Hi, this is Ross Kerber from the Boston Globe's business section. I'm sitting with Olivia Ho Cheng, who's CEO of Aurora Imaging Technologies in North Andover, which is an MRI company specialized in images for breast detection of breast cancer and other conditions like that. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about breast cancer as a public health concern? How many cases a year are there in the country?
Yes, in the United States alone, every year there are 235,000 newly breast cancer diagnosed.
That's
of which, of which 40,000 would die of a breast cancer every year.
It's that high. Well, and why don't you tell me about the current standards of care for this, the current imaging systems that are used to detect?
Yeah, the current practice is for women starting at age 40 to undertake annual mammogram screening, and then if there is if they observe any abnormality or inconclusive mammogram exam, then they will be recommended for a second look, either on ultrasound or MRI.
Now, what are the limitations of those technologies currently? And that sounds like a pretty extensive screening system.
Yes, the United States is the one of two countries that has the most extensive established screening protocol for breast cancer.
What's the other, by the way?
The other is UK.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah. And so, but X-ray, because of the technology, is very good at detecting different density in the human tissue. So if a cancer have a characteristic of microcalcification, that means have a higher density than a normal tissue, that those type of cancer could be picked up by X-ray. Now, for example, DCIS is the stage zero of breast cancer. A quarter to one-third of the newly diagnosed breast cancer cases are DCIS.
DCIS stands for?
DCIS stands for ductal carcinoma in situ. That means the cancer still inside of the duct, not yet infiltrated to other areas.
So still, is it barely noticeable?
Very noticeable, and it's because it's within the duct, so it could be small.
Okay.
That's why it's one of the reasons that it's harder to be detected.
I get it. So your system is more specialized than the current systems that are out there.
Yes. There are about 10,000 MRI systems on the market, of which 2,000 of them have breast coil as one of the components. So technically, those 2,000 systems could be used for breast MRI exam if they're called to. But still, very, very few of those systems are utilizing any breast MRI because it's not just one component that you need to provide. It really is the whole system has to be designed specifically for this organ, which is very different from the rest of the organ.
How is it, you were saying something earlier about the water content or the cells are different? Why don't you elaborate a little more?
Yeah. Again, there are two different kinds of cancer. Uh-huh. One is more associated with the microcalcification. Those type of cancer are normally slower growth, and it could take 10 years to develop to a really cancerous stage. The other kind is associated with called microvascularity. That means a lot of extra vein to supply growth of this tumor. Those may not have the microcalcification characteristic, but because they have this abnormal field of blood of growth, it could be very, very cancerous and aggressive in growing.
And aggressive in growing develop very quickly.
Very quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
So that is, and that makes this particular tissue particularly prone to cancer. Is that part of it?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah.
Got it. And then tell me a little more about how your system is designed to observe this tissue.
Okay. The breast cancer, because it's the area of cancer could be involved. Breast cancer is very large. You would be involved in two breasts, plus the chest wall and the lymph node. So this is a very large area you need to take a full view of, not just one small isolated place.
Are we talking like 2 square feet, or we're talking a...
depends on the size of the woman.
Depends on the person, yeah. I guess we shouldn't get into that area. But compared to a standard MRI, is that like just a few centimeters of view?
Yes. Uh-huh. A standard MRI's sweet spot is right in the center of a magnet, and it could be only, you know, 3 or 4 inch diameter.
Got it.
Compared to a breadth area, you're talking about, you know, tenths of inches, tenths of inches.
Right. And how is the field of view you have in your system? Is it larger because of some optical equipment?
Yes. The field of view, it's if we if the magnet has again the sweet spot, and as I explained to you, sweet spot is like a tennis racket sweet spot. If you hit the ball right at that sweet spot, then the ball is very strong and very accurate in the places where you want to go. Same as a magnet. If the image obtained from within that sweet spot is the most homogeneous, that means there is the image quality throughout the whole region is very even. So you don't know where the cancer come from in this entire area. So
right.
You cannot allow to have one area is more specific and the other area is not as specific. It has to be homogeneously. The other is nearly linear. That means the image is accurate because you have
across this larger area.
Across of this entire area. Mm-hmm. So again and again and again is we design the hardware, software, everything to focus in this entire large area to produce the most homogeneous and linear, means accurate,
right.
Images.
And is the hardware different because the coils are different or
yes.
the focus of it is different?
I hope that we have a chance to show you how a gradient coil is produced.
Okay.
And compared to whole body system, the sweet spot is right in the center. But we moved the sweet spot down and stretched out to be a ellipsoid way to cover this large area.
Oh, I see. And you're showing me two images here. You've got a sort of cross section of the MRI tube with the patient slid in, and I can see that with the standard MRI, it looks sort of like a target with the sort of a bullseye in the center of the tube, and the Aurora system sort of flattens out the sweet spot and moves it into sort of an oval shape below the patient, sort of on the frontal area.
That's right. So now, in order to do that, it's not just this is the magnet. The outside is the blue, is the magnet.
Uh-huh.
And there's inside the magnet, there is a gradient coil. We have to combine our design between the gradient coil and the magnet in order to produce this change of the sweet spot.
Got it.
And that is permanent change. It is a hardware permanent change.
Uh-huh.
And once we make that change, we can no longer go back to the center.
Got it. So this is a system that is really only useful for detecting breast cancer.
Yes.
Are hospitals reluctant to invest in it for that reason?
From a very surface, they think it's one system can be designed for just one organ compared to one system that designed for 10 other organs.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, from an administrator's point of view, it's easier to think that it's not as economical.
Well, am I going to buy this system? I got to buy 10 more like it, right?
Exactly.
So do you run into that?
We run into that a lot.
Uh-huh.
But from Dr. Stout's case, when she used the whole body system, she does only 300 procedures in 4 years. After she acquired ours, in 2 years, she did 3,500 cases.
That's all. This is this woman, this doctor in Oklahoma.
Now, if some people may argue, maybe that's overuse. Maybe she abused the system. As a matter of fact, it was completely the opposite. If you see how many patients change their treatment course because of the additional MRI system provided, you change that woman's 3 surgery in excess of $50,000 to only $1,000.
Uh-huh.
So it's a much, much more precise, much, much more effective using of the healthcare costs.
Huh. That reminds me of another question. Are there any aspects to this where you're trying to get Medicare, CMMS to agree, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, to agree to reimburse more for the system or particular?
As a matter of fact, Medicare is reimbursing. They reimburse for this procedure,
uh-huh.
the MRI procedures. And they also required that the MRI, breast MRI has to be bilateral. That means both breasts.
Got it.
Now, the reason is because 8 to 10% of the breast cancer patients, when they are diagnosed with one cancer on one breast, there is 8 to 10% chance that they may have cancer on the contralateral breast.
Got it.
And then 20 to 30% of the chance they may have multifocal in that same breast. So the understanding of the extent of the disease is really the highest scope.
And that reminds me of something we were saying earlier. So another advantage of your system is that it scans both breasts at once as compared to one at a time.
One at a time. If you want to get the high resolution, or if you need to cover the both breasts, you may have to compromise the image quality. That means the thicker slide that will run the risk of missing the smaller
cancer. And probably a longer time for the patient in the tube, right?
Exactly.
That's no fun, is what I hear.
It's not just that, because you need to depend on the contrast agent to see the difference before contrast and then after contrast.
Got
right?
It.
Contrast wash out in 8 minutes.
Oh, that's
so
all you
within
have,
right? That 8 minute time, you have to be able to obtain the signal, construct the image. Otherwise, when the time's over, you're not.
Uh-huh.
You don't
and just for the listeners, that contrast agent is a fluid that's injected into the patient that goes through the system to bring out the images with more clarity. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think this will be a very good explanation with the combination of the hardware and software.
Uh-huh.
Again, focus on this very large area that we were able to see. This is a pre-contrast.
Mm-hmm.
A normal MRI system without fast suppression. I explained to you before that fast suppression is key because cancer never grows in the fat.
Right.
Yet both pre and post contrast injection, the cancer and fat both light up.
Right.
So you wanted to spot this area, which was not before, but after of normality. That's without fat suppression.
Right.
All right. Now with our technique, Rodeo, that I spelled out that for you, it is ability to spot this, which is very much easier because fat distraction has been taken out.
Right, so what you're showing me is a much more robust image that sort of shows this cancerous lump within the breast tissue.
Yes, and right. this contrast highlights in 8 minutes only. So you have to be within that 8 minutes, be able to obtain all the image, which is 128 slides each time.
Now for your system, how long does it take to image one patient with your system?
So normally the protocol is one pre-contrast acquisition and then two post-contrast acquisition.
Okay.
That two post-contrast has to be obtained within 10 minutes.
Okay.
All right. So you can see the difference, the washout immediately after injection and a few minutes after that.
Okay.
So each acquisition is about 5 minutes.
Okay.
So technically it's 15 minutes between three acquisition. Then plus you have to inject the contrast, so combination totally is about 20 to 25 minutes.
Okay. And your system?
System 20 to 25 minutes. For each patient.
That's important because the less time you spend in these tubes, the more comfortable, patients are often uncomfortable in these tubes.
Absolutely.
And your system also positions the patient differently? Their feet first into the tube?
Right.
Compared to the normal head first?
Yes.
Less
when patients are being prescribed to have a breast MRI study, they were told that something is wrong. So they are very anxious, they are nervous, they are very upset.
Right.
So if you need to, you wanted to have less impact on them. The claustrophobic is also an issue because when they lay on their back and going head in first, the sense of going into some tunnel could be a troublesome.
Why don't most MRI systems, why aren't most of them designed that way? I hear this over and over again from people who are going through MRIs, they describe it like a tomb.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So, the things is advancing, and to us, because we're so sensitive to women and their problem of having this disease, so we thought about giving them a comfort is an important issue. So our system designed as the feet in first, the lay prone, so they can still see the technology.
There must be some competition, right? Does anybody else make, the other MRI companies, do they make an MRI system specialized for breast cancer detection?
No. Yeah, no, we don't. Interesting thing you mentioned. We're just been announced or at RSNA, which is the biggest shows and medical shows in the whole world. That's right after Thanksgiving, and because our specialty, they want to acknowledge us of being a very high tech or technology breakthrough product.
Huh.
And they couldn't classify us. They don't know how to classify us.
Oh.
Because currently on the MRI system, there is either whole body system or it's extremity MRI system. There's no breath MRI.
There's
so we're the only one in the world.
Huh.
So in order to include us, they have to now modify the MRI system
create
that is
category.
Not whole body,
huh.
be dedicated system. So extremity or breast MRI.
Congratulations. How many of these have you sold so far?
So far, before I go over, I want to show you, this is a benign tissue.
Okay.
When you feel the lump, you don't know whether it's a cancer or it's benign. If benign means that a lot of them are cysts, that means they're full of water. Now, with our technique, the water, the benign tissue, benign tumor, shows up bright pre-contrast and turns dark after. That's just totally opposite from the malignant. So with the software and the hardware combination, it makes it easier for our system to detect, to differentiate cancer from a non-cancerous.
I see, and which require further medical treatment or surgery.
Right, this will require medical treatment. This, you can spare them. They say, it's okay, you don't even have to biopsy it.
Right.
It's okay.
Huh.
So, properly using our system, it not only can spare some of the unnecessary biopsy. In the United States, there are only 1 out of 5 breast biopsy yield cancers. That means 4 of them are unnecessary.
Right.
So, again, by appropriately using our system, using the system that to distinguish cancer from non-cancerous, you can spare some unnecessary biopsy.
I can see the power of that.
Yes.
Now, how many of these have you sold so far?
We have sold, currently we have 12 systems installed across the nation.
Got it. And how much do they cost a piece?
$1,250,000.
$1.25 million.
Right.
And do you have any on order?
We have a handful of pipelines in the dozen. The next 6 month installation is about another dozen.
Okay, so in the next 6 months. So you're really coming up to speed now.
Right.
Huh. And a comparable whole body system, how much does that cost?
Similar.
So the money is about the same. The issue for the user is, do they want to buy this just for the specialized application?
Right.
Are there any clinics that are... Well, there must be. I know there are clinics that specialize in this kind of detection.
Right.
I imagine that's your market.
Right. There are about 8,000 breast centers in the United States,
uh-huh.
of which we believe that at least 2,000 of them have enough volume
uh-huh.
to support this dedicated system.
What kind of volume do you think is necessary for this?
If they identify about 250 new cancer patients a year,
uh-huh.
or they do 10,000 mammogram a year,
uh-huh.
they are considered a good candidate.
Got it. Okay. Can you tell me a little bit more about how Aurora came about? You.
Aurora, in 1992, a group of engineers from MIT was formed this company called Advanced MNR.
Uh-huh.
And they were contracted by GE to develop gradient coil. That's why this company's core technology is in the gradient coil.
The gradient, and just to say a little more, the gradient coil is the key component of the MRI.
Yes.
Tell me what it generates.
What it does is to identify, because you're trying to obtain a mass amount of signal from this area.
Uh-huh.
So in order to identify the signal from a correct address, you have to be able to map the signal to where the actual place is. And so that gradient coil is to design to identify from XYZ the right signal to the right place.
Got it. And so there was a group of MIT people. They used to be a unit.
They are contracted by GE
okay.
to design this gradient coil
okay.
in order to allow the migration of a lower Tesla, which is a lower field strength
uh-huh.
MRI system, to a higher field strength.
Good.
Because when you migrate from a lower field strength to a higher field strength, imagine you from going from 4-cylinder to 12-cylinder to maybe 24 cylinders, the power of the system is significantly larger.
Higher power means clearer image.
It has the capability to produce a clear image and thinner slide.
Now, did GE stay? Does GE still own a piece of Aurora Imaging?
No. After the technology was developed called EIP, Echo Planar Imaging, which is one of the core technology to allow for this migration, continual migration of a better MRI or higher power system, they licensed it. They pay a big license fee and continue to license that
uh-huh.
technology, which we still own.
Got it. I'm sorry, who paid who for the license?
GE and Siemens. Both
GE and Siemens licensed the technology from this company?
From this company.
Okay. And does MIT own a piece of the company?
No. When I say MIT, really, uh-huh. They graduate from MIT, but it's a private company they
okay.
form. Yeah.
And does this company still get royalties from GE and Siemens?
No. It's a one-time license fee, so it was a very big lump sum. And once they pay, they have that ability. They have that right to.
Got it. And then, how did you come to this? You were at a previous company.
Yes, I come from a banking background. I'm an investment banker. Form healthcare funds. To invest specifically in the medical technology company. Mm-hmm. And we started with a company in Sunnyvale, California called Accuray. They produce a system called CyberKnife. And the CyberKnife is a robotic system, hold a mini-sized linear accelerator, shooting invisible beam from hundreds of locations to cross at the tumor and spare the surrounding tissue. If you have seen the operation, it would be amazed. It was
much less invasive.
Completely non-invasive, because the patient goes in wide awake and not even sedated, lay on the patient bed for 1 hour, and seeing this invisible the robot moving around the room shooting invisible beams, and an hour later cancer is destroyed.
And how from that to this?
And after heavily involved with that company and brought that company from less than 10 employees and annual revenue of less than $1 million a year to now over about $50 million annual revenue and over 200 employees. I migrated to this company and have this extensive understanding of heavy capital equipment development and commercialization process. And I felt that as a woman, that this will suitable for my migration.
This is, let me just go back. So a lot of this company's work is obviously the development of this capital equipment.
Right.
You have an FDA approval. How long did it take to get that?
It took all over 4 years we obtained about 5 or 6 different FDA clearance, and we continue to do product development and obtain more FDA clearance.
What's the next milestone from the FDA you hope to get? Is there a new indication you're looking for?
No, currently the lion's share of the FDA clearances is all done. Anything that over and above is to improve the throughput, to make it more faster, make it more efficient, more
user-friendly. But then you have all the indications a clinician would want for breast cancer screening.
Yes. We went even one step further. Normally, a medical technology device company do not need to get an indication from the FDA. But because it's a dedicated approach, because it's a specifically designed for breast cancer, so we took on a big task by obtaining a clinical data with 500 patients' data, went to FDA in 2001, and obtained a list of indication that's appropriate to be used for prescribing this service.
So other than, tell me about that list, other than breast cancer, are there other indications?
It's all breast cancer, but the MRI system was originally used very frequently for detected check the implant integrity to see whether it was a leaking.
Right.
Yeah. This was originally
when there were concerns about leaking silicone breast implants.
Right. And that's why so many breast coil was used. But those were not really designed for detecting cancer, small cancer. It's okay to see whether there's a rupture, but not for cancer to distinguish from regular normal tissue and the cancerous tissue was not the forte of the original design. So those are the indication we obtain from the FDA. You can see a large part of it is for treatment planning.
Oh, I see. You're showing me a list now, and it looks like it's pretty extensive, like determining the extent of cancers and monitoring cancer therapies and evaluating patients with positive surgical margins for residual cancer.
Right.
That's to check if a surgeon needs to go back in. I can see where this is important. Right. And also a set of screening characterizations.
Right. And those are technically when FDA approve an indication like that, that the medical insurance should should reimburse.
Right.
And so those are the advantage we have over and above others by we legally can claim that this is FDA approved indication.
Interesting. Good. Well, I feel like this is a pretty good rundown of the company and your technology. Is there anything I'm missing, or do you think that there's some other? Is there a possibility that, you know, MRI systems could be developed to screen for, I don't know, other specific types of cancers or other medical conditions?
Yes, actually many other companies are starting to think about this dedicated approach. For example, like prostate cancer, there are very prevalent as uh-huh. well. And currently there are, and prostate also has a very large area. You need to, you know, evaluate a large area compared to a
right.
small organ. So more and more people started to think about that, how to.
And I would guess you have both the technical issues and the economics of each of these things.
Absolutely.
Do you have a market that would actually invest in these specific systems?
Well, we currently believe that breast cancer MRI market has still been severely underserved.
Uh-huh.
Out of 25 million MRI procedures done a year in the United States, less than 1% are breast MRI.
Interesting.
That's all?
Huh.
Yeah.
What do you think that could go to if a system like yours was widely adopted? It could be 10%?
Yeah, in the United States, every year there are 1.2 million new cancer cases mm-hmm. a year.
All cancers.
Of which 90% are solid tumor.
Right.
And 10% are blood related. Out of the 90% of the 1.2 million, 235,000, one organ, one gender represent 20%.
That's a lot.
Of the cancer. Newly diagnosed. So I think it's justified to have at least, you know, close to that percentage in the MRIs.
And this discussion wouldn't be complete if I didn't mention there's concerns about overuse of MRIs and overprescribing of MRIs, and that is a driver of healthcare costs. How does that enter into your business plan? There must be, maybe you are arguing that your system is more cost effective.
Yes, our system is, in our point of view, is extremely cost effective. If you see the cases like what Dr. Stahl has presented, you from 50,000 to less than, you know, 1,000 procedure, that is a no brainer, right? United States have a gross national product about $11 trillion, and if healthcare is about 14%, so it's about $1.5 trillion that's spent in the healthcare expenses. If you divide it by the population, it's about $5,000-$6,000 a year just for healthcare. Now, just the imaging itself, combined with all CT, MRI, everything is about $9.3 billion. That's less than 1%.
But people are still arguing that this is a big amount of money and it's growing that's spent on imaging.
Mm-hmm.
Is your argument that more effective imaging cuts costs in other ways?
Yes. If you can properly diagnose and more accurately prescribe the treatment course, it will reduce rather than increase. So
okay.
If $100 was spent on the health care,
mm-hmm.
what do you think the percentage should be allocated for treatment, and what percentage should be allocated for diagnosis? I would argue if, you know, 10% allocated for diagnosis and 90% for treatment, that's not very effective. If you diagnose it more properly, then your treatment can be very effectively.
Is there anything else I'm missing? This feels like a pretty good discussion of the company and the technology and the context.
There's one thing that
sure.
I feel like I'm like a missionary out there trying to preach to the world that with this good technology, there are good technology there. Why is it not being widely used? Because the technology was not placed in the right people's hand. We spent so much money in the all kinds of fundraising to educate patients, but most of the patients rely on their physician to give them the best treatment, advice, and diagnosis. So if we can put this good tool, right tool, and educate our breast radiologists, breast surgeon, properly use this technology, it will not only save life, it will reduce drastically of the medical expenses.
Sounds like you've got a company with a mission as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Great. Olivia, thanks very much for the time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. and check in next Wednesday for a brand new BizCast. Or better yet, subscribe and have BizCast automatically delivered to your computer and MP3 player.